The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the speaker. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice from your own physician.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tobias Matei. I'm the deputy editor of the North American Spine Society Journal, and I have the pleasure of having with me here today the whole team who published this great systematic review and meta-analysis entitled Ultra Early, meaning less than 8 hours, surgery for thoracolumbar spinal cord injuries, a systematic review and meta-analysis. The senior author is Dr. Konstantinos Margaris, who is the director of complex spine surgery at the neurosurgery department at Mount Sinai. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you for having us today.
Perfect. So do you want to give us a little bit of your background and some of the trauma experience you have in at your institution and why you decided to perform this meta-analysis with special focus on thoracolumbar injuries?
Yeah, so I spent many years working at the Elm Crest Hospital, where Dr. Hickman is also located, and then at Mount Sinai Morningside in Manhattan. So we have treated over the years many patients with spinal cord injury, both cervical and thoracic. And, you know, from the very beginning with, you know, we're discussing with Dr. Hickman, and we felt intuitively that we need to be very, very aggressive with the treatment of these conditions. You know, for a traumatic brain injury, we had like a 4 hour time limit in our institutions that, you know, when a case was operated more than 4 hours after the injury, there was a quality review to see where was the delay and why that happened. And, you know, intuitively, I felt that, you know, something similar had to be done for spinal cord injury. Definitely, there are many more challenges for spinal cord injury compared with traumatic brain injury, meaning that many times these patients have other systemic injuries. They might have abdominal or chest injuries. So it's not as... let's say that there are more challenges than the traumatic brain injury. And for TBI, I mean, many times we've done craniotomy and the trauma team will be operating the abdomen at the same time. But obviously that's not feasible for thoracic spinal cord injuries, where if you decide to operate, you have to place the patient prone, and you don't have access to the abdominal cavity or the chest cavity. There is a need for a thoracotomy or laparotomy at the same time. So we definitely acknowledge that there were additional challenges if somebody were to endeavor in operating very early in spinal cord injury. So, but at the same time, we felt that we need to be more aggressive and see what will come out of it. And we had an experience on this very early surgeries, and we felt that we need to also review the literature and see what is out there. And I think 8 hours is a relatively reasonable time limit to aim for thoracic spinal cord injury, because usually these patients need a more thorough workup by the trauma team before they get cleared for the spine surgery. So I think 8 hours is a reasonable, again, goal for this type of operations.
Perfect. And I agree. In my institution, I'm the one of the most aggressive surgeons here. And I know there was a lot of pushback for both for cervical and thoracolumbar injuries, for leveling as a two and pushing the OR and the whole logistics of that, and probably bumping some elective cases. But I do believe that 8 hours, I mean, less than that, it's a little bit unrealistic, because if you imagine the time for transportation to the hospital, then the time the patient usually get a CT scan to begin with, and then it's rare that we operate without getting an MRI for evaluation of ligamentous injuries at adjacent levels, or hematoma, or something that may require a laminectomy on top of our instrumentation. So by the time the patient, even if the MRI is ordered, that by the time the patient gets the MRI, we're already close to 5 hours, and then it's a matter of trying to get the case going as a level case. And usually, I mean, if you're within the 8 hour time frame, we're being very efficient. So tell me a little bit about the main results of your study and what you found in terms of the available evidence for ultra early surgery compared with the traditional 24 hour threshold, or even with late surgery.
Abhi, would you like to comment on that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hi, thank you for having me. I'm Abhi, I'm one of the authors. We work with Dr. Margetas, Dr. Aikman, and Dr. Carr on this project. And the main results of our study basically showed that the patients who underwent ultra early surgery, which is less than 8 hours, had significant improvement in the mean ASIA scale compared to the group that underwent surgery for more than 8 hours later.
One of the
so
things
that was the primary outcome.
Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was the primary outcome of the study.
Okay. So one of the things that I noted in the study, and it speaks to the how generalizable those results are, is that, I mean, from this, I think it was 130-something patients that you were able to get with this five studies. It says that 57% underwent decompression within 8 hours. And that speaks a little bit about, you know, how these studies were done. But at the end of the paper, you even cite that a study in Canada in which less than 34% of the patients were able to get to the OR within 12 hours. So in some sense, I mean, this, it's a selected subgroup of patients. But at the same time, I completely agree. The problem with evidence-based medicine for spinal cord injury is that it's very challenging to get high quality studies, and the best we had so far, and that's where most of our literature on the 24-hour comes from, is the STASCIS, which is focused on the cervical spine. And it had 313 patients. It was a prospective cohort. But beyond that, I mean, we're still kind of relying on prospective studies or retrospective series with a reasonable number, and then on meta-analysis to get the data together to try to support our efforts in terms of coming with institutional policies for having that can allow early treatment for spinal cord injury. Like I said, it's not an easy task if you want to implement a protocol like that, and you're going to have significant pushback from OR staff and from every side, especially if you're trying to do that on a regular basis by bumping cases. So we definitely need that literature. We have enough literature, it seems, in terms of basic science studies showing the secondary cascade of injury. But in terms of clinical study, I completely agree with you that we're still falling behind, and that's why this meta-analysis is very timely.
Yeah, I know. I agree. And to that point, I think it's also like there's some sort of also a selection bias also for other biases when even performing this initial studies, because just given the few number of studies we're able to find in literature throughout echoes how difficult it is to get ultra early decompression consistently. And even these studies, I feel like an institution would not be able to do a prospective or retrospective studies unless they were one of the few institutions that were able to strictly, you know, control or they were enough resources for patients to be able to be operated within less than 8 hours. So I think that's also one of the causes for so few studies in literature on the subject, because it's just a difficult thing to do. But the reason we wanted to do this meta-analysis, because as more of these isolated studies started to come out, it seemed that people were really willing to push the envelope per se and really wanting to find out if it was possible to consistently operate with less than 8 hours.
For sure. And one of the things that you highlight in this study, and maybe a limitation even with the data that you have, is that there's no study isolating thoracic spinal cord injuries. And we know very well that the prognosis for L1 or L2 burst fracture, even if they present with some weakness related to the conus, or the prognosis is much better than upper injuries, T12, T11, T10, and upper thoracic, in which you have contusion of the spinal cord. So at the same time, being able to isolate true thoracic spinal cord injuries from those injuries affecting the conus, I think is very important in order to avoid mixing those results and evaluating the prognosis. Do you want to speak a little bit about the effect size that you found in this study? I found it very interesting. I mean, it's a very large effect size, and it seems in terms of the risk of bias in the study, despite being all of them small series, it seems that you found that the risk of bias and the heterogeneity was relatively low. So do you want to comment a little bit on the quality of your data and how we can interpret that treatment effect size that you found?
Yeah, so, you know, like you said, surprisingly, like, despite the studies being, individually, not a lot of patient population, the total 133 patients that were selected as part of the cohort were heterogeneous enough in terms of the outcomes. However, in terms of the baseline characteristics, very homogeneous enough to be able to give us a large effect size on the study. Generally, it was around 1.25 for a group less than 8 hours versus 0.30 treatment effect for a group that was operated greater than 8 hours. And surprisingly, when we did the analysis, looked at a standardized mean difference and Eggers regression test, it shows that there was no selection there was no publication bias, which is big for a meta-analysis where you are limited to the number of studies you can use due to availability. So I think that's what kind of pushed us. We use multiple tests to make sure that the results we got were the most accurate representation of what was statistically found. And we as the paper shows, we use multiple different people as well as different statistical methods to be able to remove confounders and to be able to show any kind of a publication bias. And when the Eggers regression test did not show any publication bias, that's when that kind of sealed that the results we found were more reliable than you would expect on such a small population and sample size overall.
Sure. And when we in terms of sample size, it seems that in order to have, even with this large effect size, that seems to be the case for ultra early surgery compared with the late surgery or surgery within 24 hours. I mean, to have a meaningful sample size, you need to be in the orders of a few hundred patients, just like this task studies with 300 patients. And one of the problems of having studies just with a few dozens of patients is that it's very hard to perform any meaningful subgroup analysis. And in our experience, there may be a meaningful difference, at least I can tell you from my practice, in terms of decision-making for patients that are Asia A or Asia, or with a complete spinal cord injury. And one of the things you even mentioned in your discussion, there was one study that found that only patients with the Asia A had benefit from acute intervention. That's a little bit counterintuitive for me, because if anything, those patients that really make me push for ultra early surgery are patients that are Asia C. I mean, those are the patients that have less than 50% of the muscle groups, more than 50% of muscle groups that are not anti-gravity. So those patients at the beginning, they're not going to be ambulatory. And if you are able to go from an Asia C to a D, those patients may be ambulatory. And I think that it's not that a change from an Asia A to a B doesn't matter. Recovering sensation is important to avoid the cubitus ulcer. But the main thing that families ask and patients ask is, am I going to be able to walk again? So at least in my practice, I can tell you that perhaps because Asia A patients tend to have more polytrauma and sometimes they are somewhat unstable and needing a laparotomy because of acute hemorrhage, but also because of the neurological, of the incomplete nature of neurological deficits, I tend to be much more aggressive in terms of advocating for ultra early surgery regardless of the time of the day for patients with incomplete BC, especially the Asia C. I don't know, what's your practice, Dr. Constantinos?
Yeah, so I agree with you. I mean, unless we see like spinal cord transection on the MRI or like a really devastating injury, I'm also aggressive with the Asia A's. And also with the Asia A's, you sometimes you don't really know if it's a true like complete injury or it's just the effects of the spinal shock. So I think that the current trend with in some trauma centers and with other people that have discussed is that they have started to be more aggressive with AZAs. While in the past, a patient was coming in AZA, they were saying, "Well, that's it's done. I mean, there's nothing we can do right now." But I think that the current trend is to still be aggressive with these patients, and we have been also aggressive as long as the trauma team clears them for our surgery, and as long as we don't see again like a devastating spinal cord injury, like a transection or complete obliteration of the spinal canal by the bone fragments, where most likely the spinal cord is anatomically kind of transected.
My thought process when dealing with these patients is I always ask myself, what's the benefit of the delay? I mean, if you're going to perform surgery and you're going to have the same blood loss and you're going to have the same risk of possible complications, unless the patient is unstable enough that you think you're going to be able to reduce the perioperative morbidity by delaying to the next day or to as much as you need to stabilize the patient. The bottom line is that we know from the pathophysiology of the spinal cord injuries that you're keeping the spinal cord under compression for a longer period. So in those situations, I completely agree with you. There are basically two groups that I see that older spine surgeons tend to, I would say, not treat with that sense of urgency that the younger generation seems to approach. One is central cord syndrome, and you go to the meetings, and the very concept of central cord syndrome, it's a little bit nebulous. Most people now tend to classify them as incomplete spinal cord injury because it's really hard to differentiate which ones are those who really have the good prognosis with conservative treatment, and which are the patients that may even progress in the following days. To a meaningful, not only to a meaningful both distal and proximal weakness. And the other one are the group with AJA spinal cord injuries that if you see the older generation of spine surgeons, sometimes they tend to book those cases almost as an elective case within their block time instead of treating upfront the pathology. So taking account the results of your study, and I mean you were able to get 133 patients, which is about what we have in the literature for thoracolumbar injuries. What do you think is the future for us to have better data on this? We know that randomized trial is it's completely out of question. One of the studies, it was curious, I think it was the Turkish study from 2008. They claimed to be a randomized trial, but actually the patients that came on Friday, they operated just on Tuesday, and the ones that came on Monday, they operated the same day, and they said this is randomizing. But the bottom line is that you cannot truly randomize or get informed consent from a patient for delaying treatment, right? I cannot imagine any IRB approving a form that a patient agrees to have the surgery delayed 24 hours for the sake of obtaining data. So, taking that into account, what do you think is, besides this type of approach that you took in terms of combining the available data in the literature, what do you think we need? Like maybe multi-institutional studies or a longer term studies like the one which was performed for cervical spine cord injury, the STASCIS, something similar to that? Or should we just bundle both cervical and thoracic spinal cord injuries and try to prove that as a whole, ultra early surgery may have benefits for any type of spinal cord injury and then do a subgroup analysis of cervical and thoracolumbar?
I don't like the idea of bundling together the cervical and thoracic injuries because I think that there are different challenges. Definitely the thoracic usually are more challenging. Usually there's higher energy involved in the thoracic versus the spinal the cervical spine. So in order to get like more data, as you said, I don't think that a randomized controlled trial is from an ethics or even I don't think that it will be approved. Why how can you justify withholding like the treatment for the patient? I think that as a first step is by having studies like ours with that, so that there might be a potential benefit in operating more early. I think that might allow people to be able to push for that option in their institutions, get the resources that are needed in order to be able to operate sooner on these patients. So I think that will be like the first step to generate more, to have more cases that are operated earlier on and try to analyze the data that will come out of these new studies. That it can be either retrospective or even better, prospective.
Perfect. And one thing that I always emphasize to my residents, and it may seem like a cliche, but we know very well that absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. So especially in spine surgery, it's not uncommon, and actually it's the routine that we have to make decisions based on a rationale of the pathophysiology and not that much on evidence-based medicine, which is very good usually for drug approvals, but especially for the surgical specialties, the challenges in randomizing the patients, the heterogeneity of the pathologies we're treating. So at the end of the day, even when it's a situation like spinal cord injury, where the data is very inconclusive, the great question is, what are the rationale or what are the justifications for the delay? And if the main rationale or justification is the challenge with the institution or the logistics to get OR time, I think those are things that are not justifiables in terms of patient care. Those are the things we have to fight against and employ our best efforts to treat our patients in a timely fashion. Anything else you would like to comment or leave a message to our listeners?
Hey, Tobias, if you don't mind if I
please
hop on for a second. Sorry for the lack of video. You mentioned about the ethical implications that might be involved. And, you know, there are some studies that actually have requested to delay surgery until 8 hours. Because of the perceived increase in complication rates with ultra early surgery. And so I think that's what one of the things that the meta-analysis also tends to show is that, you know, that worry for increased complication rates really isn't borne out overall in the literature. And that as long as the trauma team has done a thorough job of making sure that there aren't any severe life-threatening injuries, that it is safe to try and get these patients into the OR and operate as quickly as possible. And both Dr. Margetis and I were in a situation where we basically were like, well, we don't think it's really ethical to ask people to be randomized and wait for, you know, a couple hours. If we have the ability to take them into the OR at 6 hours, we're not going to screen them or put them in the study, because to wait an extra 2 hours just to get enrolled in the study didn't seem like an ethical proposal. So, and I think it's just like stroke. This is, you know, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we have targets that are aggressive, then it kind of forces the hospitals and to provide the resources necessary to meet those targets. You know, whether that's directly skipping, non-trauma centers and bringing anybody with, obviously, with a suspected spinal cord injury to a level one or level two trauma center. You know, hospital policies that MRIs should be, if requested to be done, stat should be done within a reasonable time frame. I know our hospital has a 2 hour limit on that. So basically, if we as the neurosurgeons request the need for a stat MRI, it goes immediately to the top of the list and it's supposed to be done within 2 hours. And, you know, sometimes we still have to push for that, but I think those are the types of policies you need in order to be able to get patients into the OR and decompressed as quickly as possible.
For sure. And you even mentioned in your paper the analogy to the thrombectomies, mechanical thrombectomy or thrombolysis for stroke. And that's one of the things that I always mention when we have those cases, that it's 3 in the morning, we order stat MRI, they're having challenging finding the tech. I mean, we're still doing mechanical thrombolysis and getting stat MRIs of the brain for patients with acute stroke. So I don't understand why we have to treat spinal cord injury as a pathology that deserves less attention from our institutions instead of having those protocols that they measure from time to entrance to angio cath or something like that. So I do think that, yes, I mean, a patient comes with a spinal cord injury, we should have almost like a stroke protocol or spinal cord injury protocol that we activate, and we try to get everyone on board. And still in my institution, I find a little bit troubling when we have a patient with a spinal cord injury. We're trying to get the MRI, and we try to get everything to do ultra early surgery. And by the time we get in the OR, the patient has no IV access, no Foley, no ART line. And we know that that could have been done, easily done, while the patient was in the ED or waiting for the MRI. So I think those are the measures that can be easily implemented and coordinated, so we can treat these patients in a more effective manner.
Agree.
Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate your contribution to NASDJ, and we look forward to further submissions, and we appreciate your time today, and have a great day.